Executives at other oil companies tended to regard their Exxon cousins as ruthless, self-isolating, and inscrutable, but also as priggish Presbyterian deacons who proselytized the Sunday school creed Rockefeller had lived by. We don't smoke, we don't chew, we don't hang with those who do. Ethics rooted in Judeo-Christian religious tradition were part of the fabric of Exxon. They encourage you to get married, a former manager recalled. Such values were not just a lot of lip service, said another longtime executive. J.D. Rockefeller went to church every Sunday, and his employees better by God go to church on Sunday, or they were not good employees. It is kind of a legacy. When I went to work for the company in the 1970s, managers would have employees join hands around the table and pray for the success of Exxon. Compared with executives at San Francisco-based Chevron, or the international behemoths of British Petroleum and Royal Dutch Shell, a British-Dutch conglomerate, senior executives at Exxon sometimes lacked what bi-coastal American or European executives would call worldliness. Many of Exxon's U.S.-based executives traveled extensively, but remained insulated, introverted. When they mingled, it was to golf or hunt with others like themselves. Manhattan no longer seemed a suitable base. Striving senior executives would typically arrive at Exxon's modern headquarters, a towering white skyscraper, at about 7:30 a.m., only to find it vacant because there were no early morning go-getters. Long commutes from the suburbs seemed to deter early birds. In any event, the sense among some executives was that a lethargy had set in. You could have thrown a bowling ball down the 53rd floor, where top executives work, and it wouldn't have hit anybody, recalled one manager. Howard Kaufman, the corporation's president at the time, advised the executives he met who were anxious for change, "If you ever get this place in a van, make sure it drives at least 2 days before it stops." When Rawl and Raymond decided to move around 1987, Rawl pulled a map of the United States out of his desk, and they quickly drew X's through one section of the country after another. The West Coast, because its taxes were punishing. The North, because it was cold. The far Southwest, because it seemed too out of the way. That left them with the Confederacy, essentially. They scouted new headquarters sites in Atlanta, Jacksonville, Charlotte, Houston, Austin, and Dallas. Narrowed the choice to Texas. Bought some land in Austin, but ultimately selected Dallas because it was easy to reach from around the world and would keep the headquarters away from the oil provincialism of Houston, where Exxon already had a large presence. They sold the 6th Avenue building and reaped $477 million. Exxon recruited heavily from the petroleum engineering departments of the public universities of America's South, Southwest, and Midwest. By locating its headquarters in Texas, the corporation placed itself in the landscape to which many of its long-tenured American employees belonged. Exxon maintained kind of a 1950s Southern religious culture, said an executive who served on the corporation's board of directors during the Raymond era. They're all engineers, mostly white males, mostly from the South. They shared a belief in the one right answer, that you would solve the equation and that would be the answer, and it didn't need to be debated. The executive was startled to discover at one point that the corporation's top five leaders, all white males, were the fathers, combined, of 14 sons and 0 daughters. The mathematical probability that such a quirk had no basis in the corporation's social mores was low. What is there in the culture here that promotes people with sons, he wondered. Sports? Hunting? He could not figure it out. If there was indeed something other than a fluke to discern. Lee Raymond, a son of the working-class Great Plains, considered himself unabashedly to be a free-market capitalist and resisted government intervention and regulation instinctively. Dallas suited him. When Raymond found himself in a public battle with gay rights organizations over his decision to deny corporate benefits to same-sex partners of his employees, a board member challenged him to at least make a public statement saying the corporation did not discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation. Raymond declined. He told colleagues that he did not pay much attention to matters such as sexual preference, but he was not going to make an announcement. "Do you discriminate against people based on sexual preference?" the director asked. "Of course not," Raymond answered. "Then why don't you say it?" "Well, it's not required by law." "But it's a freebie," the director persisted, speaking later to one of Raymond's lieutenants. The executive retorted, "What's next? Polygamy?" The Exxon way included an updated version of a decades-old employee ranking system in which, each year, all managers were required to assign a number rating to all personnel under their supervision, ranking those of similar pay grade from best to worst, and to recommend high performers for assignments that would groom them for later leadership. The evaluations covered judgment, creativity, leadership, competence, sensitivity, and other subjective qualities. But there was no grading on a curve. Supervisors were required to distribute outstanding and inadequate grades in even proportions. Those initially ranked in the top tier were then promoted into a group of similarly ranked high performers to determine which of those would emerge as the best of the best. The winners could expect to be promoted quickly, but also to have to pick up and move every few years. The system, analogous to natural selection, hardened Exxon's culture and wrote the corporation's DNA. It was driven by numbers, focused tightly on performance, and in many ways, inflexible. "The forced ranking system was poisonous," said one manager who went through it successfully. "It created feelings of distrust with your co-workers because of the competition and the zero-sum consequences." Amid unrelenting cost reductions, reassignments, demotions, salary reductions, and job cuts, the pressure only intensified. A former executive once described the ranking system as dog-eat-dog competition under the patina of working together.